Now here is your wonderful host, Patricia Sun. Patricia.
Hi. Thank you so much, Cameron. This is a great way to start Trust the Problem. We had a whole bunch of problems today, and I love it because it's like living the teaching. And Trust the Problem is an idea that I came up with because it seemed to me through the many, many years that I've been teaching, about 35-some years, that one of the problems is the way we think, that we cause a lot of our suffering by the way we hold information. And so learning to trust problems as fuel for new insight and discovery is a leap, really, I almost want to say insanity, but it certainly is a leap in our capability and our happiness. So I decided, I'd had a radio show for quite a few years called Connections, and while I love that premise, and it's still always true that everything we're doing is about being connected, I thought I would focus in, including connections and the power of that and how everything is connected, but really focus in on problems because, guys, we know these days there are so many problems, and it's exponentially growing with our technology, our capability to impact the world very powerfully, very efficiently when we haven't thought things through, when we are still young. I often say that the human race is young, and I sometimes use the word immature, and I never mean it in a scoldy sense. You know, it's not that the way people say, oh, you're so immature. It's not that. We literally, as a species, are so new in geological terms. We are so instantaneously new that we are not finished yet. And so what, for 35 years, I opened every workshop that I did, and I've done thousands, is we're welcome to at the evolutionary leap. We're in the midst of an evolutionary leap. And this evolutionary leap is one of consciousness. It's a new capacity to perceive. So we are all beginning to be overloaded precisely because the old matrix that we use to process information, to get along, to survive, to discover, to do things, is too small. It's as though we have a magnificent supercomputer beyond belief, and we're putting tremendously primitive software on it. And the software is, the software is limiting what we can do. And what I hope that the show Trust the Problem does, and what you're free to call about any problem whatsoever, because that's the fuel by which we discover, and it's whatever is up for you is the right one. It's the right question. It's the right thing at the right time. So Trust the Problem is about living the experience of trusting the problem. You know, these days, a lot of the good words are out there. The pioneering for the good words happened about 3 decades ago. People have been picking it up and making their fortunes pronouncing the words. And we have a whole culture of appearances, pronouncements, looking like. We have trainings in business to act like you care about the customer, not actually caring about the customer. And so we are shifting. It's almost as though we've reached a critical mass, a crucial point, where the more input, and it keeps geometrically progressing, we almost can't turn it off, the more input, the more the old mechanisms are overloaded. Now, I'm here to say in very many ways this is excellent. This is very good because it's probably the only way we'd ever let go and move to a bigger picture. And, you know, we've known about global warming. Certainly all my lifetime I've been hearing about it. And I remember when I studied went to the University of California, Berkeley, and I got one of my degrees was in conservation and natural resources. And I remember one time going to the San Joaquin Valley in California, talking to farmers about the groundwater being polluted by the pesticides and the fertilizers they were using, and that it was concentrating because they kept putting it on, and the rain had washed it through into the groundwater, and they'd put some more on, and it was accumulating. Then I remember like 10 or 15 years later, the San Francisco Chronicle, Sunday Chronicle, great big 3-full-page story about the San Joaquin Valley, and a giant pullout that said we were poisoning our own groundwater and we didn't even know it. Well, there were plenty of people telling them, but they didn't want to hear it. So when you're not ready to hear it, it doesn't matter if the good words are there. You won't hear it. And it also doesn't matter if somebody says the good words, but they don't live it and they don't get it. Because this next dimension of learning is about feeling authentically by tuning in, using our intuition. And years ago, I began teaching about what right brain was like before anyone else except Robert Ornstein, who was the first person to write about left brain, right brain. And I know that I was one of the, if not the first person to really talk about right brain thinking and how the left and the right integrate. And why this is important is because it's part of the expansion of our intelligence. It's part of this evolutionary leap. And even if it isn't literally accurate, which I believe it is, but even if it weren't, it's a great metaphor for unifying intuition and logic. And that's what whole brain thinking is. It's intuition and logic joined. So we are in the midst of an evolutionary leap. Our brains are changing. It's new. You know, creativity and the word creative are so misunderstood. We keep thinking it's like getting the right answer in school. Most people who are profoundly creative do very poorly in school because they don't give the answers that the teachers want. They give new answers. They give answers outside the box, not just zany answers, but Einstein-type answers, answers that see the world in a new paradigm, people who look with fresh eyes. This is part of the evolutionary leap, our capacity to do that. And what creates that is when you can use your intuitive mind and your linear mind together. So I'm going to back just slightly and give a little groundwork for this first show of Trust the Problem about my philosophy and about understanding how left brain and right brain work and why this is the foundation of a new matrix, a new style of thinking, a new software for our brains that allows us to be more creative. And of course, I will tie in why trusting the problem is so essential. So talking about left brain and right brain, for those most people now know, but when I started, nobody knew except Robert Ornstein and the few people that read him. But left brain and right brain are, left brain is easy because that's what our culture is dominantly aware of. It's the logical, linear, verbal, cause and effect, sequential thought mind. It's right, wrong, black, white. You're for us or you're against us. It's either or. It's win or lose. And it's always needing to be right. It's really attached to needing to be right. So this evolutionary leap that we're in the midst of is one of having a new hit on needing to be right. Now, interestingly, the very thing... Gosh, you've crackled on the line here.
Take a little commercial break. We had a bit of a crackle with the phone line with Patricia Sun. This is Cameron Steele. So what we're going to do is take a little musical intro, a little musical interlude again with Bridget Sicard. So please stand by, and we'll get you on the return of Patricia Sun. So hang tight.
There's a mountain. Thank you. close your eyes. Think on what's on the other side. Begin your journey and be strong. There will be days when you'll wake up.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Patricia Sun is back with us, of course, and we're going to bring her back right on. Technical problems do happen from time to time. Patricia, are you with us? Patricia, are you with us? Patricia, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Ah, there we go. Gotcha.
Okay. All right.
Well, you're back and you're live, and
people
are waiting to hear from you.
Okay. Well, here's more example of trust the problem. And, you know, it's very interesting. When I first started teaching, and I taught all over the world at 40 countries and all kinds of circumstances, out near glaciers and in conferences of high import and in the universities and many places. But whenever we started talking about something that was very potent, things like this would happen. Electronic things would start not working, and it was as though to put a brake on it, to just slow down a little bit, to help people relax. Or maybe it's just the line isn't working. But I have noticed this before, so I'm going to slow down a little bit. I still want to get back to left brain and right brain because I think it's when we understand it, a lot of arguments start making sense. A lot of conflict starts having new solution and seem reasonable. Reasonable in the sense that there's meaning to be learned from it. There's something that really needs to, that we really need to pay attention to. So, with left brain and right brain, the intuitive mind is the mind that feels and visualizes and is spatial whole and is feeling and is not logical. In contrast to the linear left brain, which is linear thought, as I said before. It's logical, linear, sequential thought, right, wrong, black, white. And when the logical mind is immature, it wants to be right. It can't bear to be wrong. And it blocks out intuition, or it makes it kind of unconscious. The intuitive mind, when it's immature, is superstitious. It is always making up an image or a story or a metaphor to explain things. Now, that can be very powerful. It's like understanding dreams, getting the meaning inside it, not necessarily taking it literally. So there is this great power to use the intuitive mind to be creative because it thinks outside the box. It's not constrained by logic, but it is constrained by our attitude. If our attitude is fearful, it will generate fearful images. If our attitude is inspired, it generates inspired, creative, beautiful new insights. So this is the secret. This is the power. This is the evolutionary leap. To be able to trust the right brain, to know that it is thinking outside the box, and the quality, the emotional state or mental state is inspirational. And to stay in an inspirational state always allows you to pick up new things. It allows you to pick up new concepts, new ways of doing things. And this is what we're really trying to learn to do. And the fuel, the medium, the stuff we get to work with are our problems. And the bigger the problem, the bigger the leap in consciousness is going to be. And just off the top of my head, I think of, say, global warming as a problem, a serious problem that we've been in denial about for a long time. Most very serious problems, the first response is denial. Because for that old software, it senses this is outside my ability. So let's just pretend it doesn't exist. And that way we won't have to deal with it because we don't know how to deal with it. We can't deal with it. That's too much trouble or it's too scary. That's usually the problem. about sexual abuse. It's a reason why the government doesn't tell the truth. It's a reason why doctors click together and don't allow themselves to be open-minded to other forms of healing. And not all doctors, of course, but many, most. And as a doctor recently said to me, you know, doctors are taught, he says, in healing there's X, Y, and Z. And doctors are taught X, that Y and Z exist. Some know and some don't. But they don't know about it. They don't know how to be of help using it. So they just want to stick to X. And this is a good example of the kind of problem that immature logic creates, because it's narrow-minded. It doesn't want to be complicated facts. You know, what's that old expression? Don't confuse me with the facts. But this is funny because it's so true for people. And part of this evolutionary leap, this new way to deal with problems, is very related to being able to realize that they are fuel, that they are insight. So as I started to say about the global warming being a serious problem, now that, you know, the ice caps are melting and the glaciers are melting and the polar bears are starting to die because they don't have their environment any longer, and the rising water sending increase in the not the number of hurricanes and tornadoes, but the power of them. It's very interesting. About I think about a month before Hurricane Katrina, I heard Al Gore speaking in San Francisco, and he was detailing how it wouldn't increase the number, but it definitely would increase the power of hurricanes. And it was going to hit in Florida, and he was showing all the Gulf area and the changes that would take place. And, of course, then, you know, 3.5 weeks later, boom, we have Katrina, and we have this huge disaster. And the answer is, well, we didn't think it would be that bad, or we didn't know. Well, that's the kind of blockage you get when you are, my goodness, we have crackle on the line. I so apologize. Don't know what to do about it, though. So we'll just work through it. When the global warming issue came up first, it meant we would have to change so many things. It meant we would have to change how we lived, what kind of cars we drove. The companies, the big corporations, would have to adapt. They'd have to make changes. And nobody wanted to do that. It seemed too much, so we denied. This is the problem. And if we could look at problems, not with devastation, not wait till they're devastating, for one. And, in fact, that's one of my favorite images that I've taught for 30-some years. If you know what an angle looks like, you know, just a like a check mark, you know, just the angle, and at the point of the angle, the distance between the separation of the two lines is very small. But if you wait a long time and you let the lines go out, the space between the two lines gets bigger and bigger. And that's an example of what I call correction at the source. Almost all problems are better served correcting them at the source. So when you're thinking of a problem and you have a problem, it helps to have that hint that to correct at the source means to go right where it starts, because wherever it's starting is where it's most easy to correct. It's often what we don't do, because we won't see that it is a problem, won't let ourselves see it's a problem, because we don't trust problems. We don't like to have them. We think it's bad. You know, the sky will fall. We'll be wrong. Nobody will love us. All that conditioning from our childhood. We're afraid, so we don't want to be wrong. This is like the big global teaching at the moment. All the wars, all the governments, all the dysfunction of capitalism. And, you know, one of the things just to throw in, I have a saying I talk about capitalism, that there's nothing wrong with capitalism. This is going to create crackle. There's nothing wrong. Oh, my goodness. there's nothing wrong with capitalism that ethics wouldn't cure. There's nothing wrong with capitalism that ethics wouldn't cure. And the reason is that ethics corrects things at the source. Oh my goodness, I guess I just have to keep saying those things over and over. Because it is the concept of ethics, the ability to align with it, that gives us the power to correct at the source, as we think it, before we even do it. And this isn't to be a critical parent scolding us, which we rebel against. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about your higher self, your pure, true self, your gut and heart that tells you if something is a wholesome thing or not. And that when things are a little messy or dangerous or uncomfortable or sad, it means you have to rethink and go to the source of empowerment, the source of honesty, the spirit within. This is the source. And when you, oh my goodness, when you meditate just contemplate, what's wholesome here? I love the word wholesome and earnest. Those are my two favorite words. Because if you're earnestly wholesome, you're enlightened as you can be, and you will become more so every day. That is really the secret. And we are in the midst of an evolutionary leap. And part of the characteristic of it is discovering this and actualizing it, the doing of it. Oh my. Well, I guess this is just the way it feels when you first start out trying to crack through to trusting the problem. A lot of resistance.
But now there's nothing
and,
we can do about it.
You know,
that.
There's all kinds of reasons why whatever making the phone line not work. But it really is the truth. And maybe it just makes me have to keep saying that when things go wrong, you work around them, you look at them, you do your best to correct them, you try to find out what it is, but you don't become despairing. You let your heart find inspiration in the problem. You let the problem be a signpost, an exemplar of what needs to be looked at, what needs to be handled. And of course, the media in our world, exclamation point, has a lot of trouble dealing with reality or being honest and not polarizing things and being scandalous, you know, always looking for a way to get people riled up, energized, upset or angry. And so that's the way they stay important without having to do any work of thinking or solving or investigating. But they keep everybody listening. And you know, it's interesting. I didn't think I was going to say this, but it came to mind. There goes some crackle. The two highest paid talk show hosts in the United States, like 20 million some each, are Rush Limbaugh and Howard Stern. And it's very interesting that one promotes fear and hate, and the other sort of promotes the rebelliousness against our sexual insecurity and feelings and thoughts, that we can say what we want to say. We can, you know, we don't have to listen to anybody. And those two qualities are like the two extremes of our dysfunction in the United States. And that is the most popular thing. Says that it's what we need to keep looking at till we get tired of it, till we see it for what it is. And that is how we really learn. Because somebody can tell you something. I could tell you that. I could have told you that 20 years ago. But so what? Doesn't change too much. Because the people who still have the anger and the people who still have the sexual insecurity still will pursue trying to figure that out in the way that's dysfunctional, so they don't have to face the way that's heals them. Now, why is that? Why do we, and this is our big predicament, why do we avoid that which will really heal us and gravitate to indulging dysfunction? Well, to understand that, you just have to understand how the brain works and that we have defenses. And these defenses are the thing that keep us alive when we live at a primitive state, like apes and chimps and mice and, you know, kangaroos. When you're living at the level of survival, it's fight or flight. It's about mating. It's having no choice over it to speak up. Not choice like we have. Part of the magnificence of our brain is we have choice. And we're trying to segue from a primitive state of being where we live on instinct and surviving that way to really contemplating and understanding consequences and reflecting and choosing and being a creator. So it's more than just knowing, like Homo sapiens is knowing. Homo creatus is creating. We're about to create a new level. And to create, we have to learn how. We have to know that we don't just depend on the defenses. We don't just defend ourselves. We can think bigger than just defending ourselves. We can collectively become, I almost want to say a new species, but a fulfilled species. And that's when we connect to one another. That's why we are built to need one another. We long to be seen and loved and understood by one another. And we are so injured in those areas, in that way, from our childhood, from our collective culture's immaturity, that we don't want to ever let go. We don't want to ever let go of the defenses. We want to be able to just forever just defend ourselves, because all defenses are put into place physiologically, neurologically, biologically, emotionally, psychologically, at the level of your survival. And so they become so important that you don't get a chance to think about them without great effort. And the way you find out where you're hurting is where things keep happening that hurt you, patterns that repeat, where you're ill, where you're injured physically, the symptoms, the metaphors of that, where you feel lost and lonely, where you feel over and over frustrated. And that's what this show is going to be dedicated to. It's pioneering all that stuff in a light, loving, healing, real way. Not with jargon, not with good words that are just repeated from somebody else, but uniquely to you, uniquely to your call at that moment in your situation. You'll also be able to send me emails. Just go to patriciasun.com. P.S. Okay. Oh, my goodness. patriciasun.com. P.S. at patriciasun.com. And it's right there. You can send me an email. I'll read it, and I will incorporate it into the show. Every real question, everything that is a genuine concern, is valuable and what I need and want, because that reflects back. Because anybody who goes to the effort to write something down or to make a call is already an exemplar for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, millions. And so it's valuable already. So that's what we need. We need to have a trust, and you can't have a trust in problems or in one another until we are trustworthy. And being trustworthy is about being genuine and earnest and wholesome and as honest as you know how to be. This is how we do it. And you know, it ends up being incredibly exciting, a tremendous amount of fun, because gunk and fear and depression and handicap that people are carrying around, every single person on the planet carrying around for their whole lives, starts going away in big chunks, because as you start facing things, you will also face the big seal. The seal is the fear and the pain of reliving the pain that put the defense there in the first place. Now, interestingly, sometimes it's a psychological memory reliving of pain, and that's what therapy is about. Physiological release of the tension that is the pain held in the body like a battery in the muscle. And that's physical body work. And acupuncture and acupressure and all the hundreds of kinds of body works now that are all basically the same thing, using just different styles, different modes, different ways that appeal to people. But it's basically all the same thing. And that's what I started teaching 35 years ago, is that the body is holding this emotion, and that the mind-body connection is as one as when your heart pumps the blood. Is it the heartbeat in or the heartbeat out that pumps the blood? It's absolutely both. There is no separation, though there is a heartbeat in and a heartbeat out. And it's like the left brain and the right brain. They're very different. They do different things. Yet you have one brain. And we're moving to a consciousness beyond duality, beyond blame, beyond polarization, which is why I have T-shirts and bumper stickers. I made a logo in 1984. It came to me in 82, but I made the logo on a T-shirt then, and I have them now. You can see them on my website, and they're so appropriate for our time right now. And it says, you can't take sides when you know the earth is round. And if you look at the logo, if you look at it, it's a picture of the earth, and the words are written like a sentence, ringing it. And each letter is standing straight. Each letter is standing upright. And the letters are like a person. Each person is straight from their own point of view on a round globe. But everybody else is a little off, a little tilted. And some are just on the other side of the planet. And if you think the earth is flat and not round, you lose a lot of people and a lot of reality. So what we're really learning, and what this image was for, was to join the left brain and the right brain. So you'd see it verbally, the words, you can't take sides, and you know the earth is round. But you'd also see it as a visual, an image, that had a message all its own. One of the things about right brain thinking is it's the gestalt. It's the more than the sum of the parts. It sees everything. You know the old phrase, a picture is worth more than a thousand words? Well, actually, there aren't enough words in all the universe to tell you what a picture can tell you. Because a picture shows not only all the items, but the relationship to one another. And there's an old parable. I'm sure most of you know it, but some may not. And it's always good to remember. It's so valuable. It's the parable about the six blind men all touching a different part of the elephant. And the one that's holding his leg says, oh, an elephant is truly like a tree trunk. And the elephant that has his tail says, oh, no, an elephant is like a snake. Or, no, I'm sorry, it's like a rope. And the man who has his trunk says, oh, no, he's like a serpent, like a snake. And the one that's holding his ear says, oh, you're all wrong, it's like a fan. And the one that's touching his belly says, he's like a wall. So they're all correct in their experience, but they're all wrong about what an elephant is. And this is where we are. We're arguing and fighting and killing each other over walls and trunks and serpents and fans and tail and ropes. Oh, and the other one was the tusk is like a spear. So everybody is needing to be empathetic with other people. Everyone is needing to see other people's point of view. Doesn't mean you're going to throw yours away. It means you're going to amplify yours. And this is why we are the species of communication. But it's very interesting that one of the first things that we did when we learned to speak, which was an immense advantage about telling where people were going, how to get there, the big boulder after the stream, where the giant oak tree is. I mean, we had so much advantage because we could speak. We could remember things. We could tell stories of the past. We didn't have to keep reinventing the wheel. It's an amazing thing. But when you are afraid of losing power because you're immature in your thinking, one of the first things we did with being able to communicate is we learned to lie and not tell the truth. And it is that problem which is significant and is a hallmark of our immaturity, of our lack of development in communication, that we need to lie. We need to lie for self-importance. We need to lie to be safe so we don't get burnt at the stake. Very valid reason. Because through the millennia, we've, equivalently harmed people. We still do to this day. Gang up on people, particularly if they're telling the truth, is very difficult. And we all know that. And we all have defenses against that. So we have to understand it. I'm not trying to sound scoldy about, oh, we all lie and we're bad. I'm saying we all lie out of defenses that we're outgrowing, and we need to see why we do and be very careful and selective when we do and do our best consciously as grown-ups not to. That's where the pay dirt is. That's where the evolutionary leap is created. It changes the way your brain works when you don't need to lie. You don't have to live in denial with huge chunks of reality. And you need only look at our government, and not just the Republicans, though they're masters at it, I must say, especially the neocons. I feel sorry for normal Republicans of the neocon energy, because the neocons had to be there, and we let them be elected. So if you don't like them, you have to say, well, what are we learning from it? And if you do like them, you have to say, well, what can we learn from this? So the same question, what can we learn? And through the decades when I taught, we used to always say, there's no difference between the extreme right and the extreme left. The extreme right and the extreme left are the same because they believe in fear, they believe in domination, they believe in control over others, and they're frightened. And so they're ruthless. And that's what the extreme right or left has done. But just being right or left, or being conservative or liberal, is valuable. I mean, and it's valuable to be both. Some instances you'll be conservative, and in other instances you'll be liberal. Both are valuable. That's a different way to think. That's going to what's valuable, not taking sides like you're at a football game and one team's your team, whether you know the people or not, or you do anything to make them win or not, except be there and yell. It's not that. It's not about a football game. It's about knowledge. It's about growing. It's about humanity. It's about connecting. So this is the evolutionary leap. And so when we begin to know that the intuitive mind thinks in pictures, like I started to say about the parable of the blind man touching the elephant. When you begin to sense that you have an intelligence that can jump the track of logic and be bigger than logic. Oh, I know that scares everybody. Oh, my goodness. Okay, the reason is, first of all, logic is wonderful. Not against logic. Logic is a fabulous tool for sorting reality. It is not equivalent to reality. It's like a computer, garbage in, garbage out. It's just as good, you know, the reality that you, your logic tunes into, the particular pieces, are as good as the amount, variety, and pertinence. That's what the right brain gives you. The amount, the variety, and the pertinence. You get to see what's valuable. Perhaps we've been learning. You can argue any point. All you have to do is be willing to leave out certain things, and you can make anything sound plausible. So that's a significant sign. And part of our maturity is using the intuitive mind, which gives us the connections. It feels the whole picture. Even when it doesn't know all the details, you know, the way a Matisse painting might look, a little blobby and foggy, but from the distance you get this beautiful impression. You get the overall sense. And that's the difference. It's the analog and the digital. Digital can be accurate. Analog gives you the big picture, gives you more knowledge. Wisdom, perhaps, is a better word than knowledge. It gives you the bigger, it gives you knowledge that creates wisdom. And this is why trusting the problem is so important, because we are actually moving to a place where there's a new kind of thinking being born. And this new kind of thinking is able to embrace all of this, and this is difficult because it's literally unthinkable from where we were previously standing. It did not exist. Did not exist. And so it's coming into being as we struggle to solve problems, to be honest, to grow up. This is how it is created. It reminds me when I do counseling about relationships, I always remind people, because they're usually arguing over something or having a battle or a difficulty or some limitation, something not seeming okay, I always say it's through the difficulties that you expand your knowledge of one another. It's through the difficulties that you realize whether the relationship really could work or not, not out of pain and anger that you leave, but out of real understanding. Keep working on it, telling the truth. I would say let a relationship rise or fall of its own weight. By letting it rise or fall of its own weight, you say the truth, and if a person can't handle it, then, you know, that person can't handle it. And maybe they will later, but they can't now, and that's where it is. And sometimes that's a deal breaker, and then the relationship ends of its own weight. But if you keep it from the person, and you don't tell the truth, and you mislead, and it's a pretend relationship, then the grief and the pain and the anxiety and the resentment build. And eventually, somebody's unfaithful. Eventually, there's an explosion. There's an argument that's devastating. And this is because all that energy was accumulating because you couldn't process it at the source when it first came up. And, of course, we can't always even begin to see it. That's what I do, is I help people see it at the source so they can correct it when it's little. And when you're doing it on your own, often you can't begin to really see it's a problem until a lot more mess has gone on. But then the solution's still the same. You go back to the source and you correct it at the source. And it's like you start all over and you no longer have the anger and the resentment, grief, because you're correcting it. The anger, resentment, and the grief exist as biological responses to violation. And they have to keep staying there until we process what violation we're causing. And if we have a dysfunctional way to do that, if we have an old-style way that just is a loop and pretend and look like, you know, we get moments of feeling high. You know, it's like manic depression. We get moments of feeling high, and then we crash and burn because it's not real. And it, and the inflatedness, while it's a form of inspiration, is inspiration without earnestness. It's inspiration without truthfulness. And you have to have both. That's the linear mind, the logic, the facts, the detail. Keep track of it. So this is what the evolutionary leap really is. It's just like creating a relationship with God in the universe, the way men and women and all kinds of human relationships are created is through earnestness, through having problems, through having good humor, goodwill, tuning into yourself to see what hurts and why, so you have some sense of what it is at the source that you want to create. So you have some sense of what it is. This is the evolutionary leap. This is where we're going. And I hope in future shows, you know, we're not finished yet, but we're winding down and still time for someone to call if they'd like. But I understand very takes a lot of courage because I will be real. Oh, there goes that crackle again. Okay. Don't have to call today. Call another day. It's all right. Because we are in the midst of discovering, creating, building courage. And I love the word courage. Courage comes from the old French, cœur, which means heart. And truly, when we have real courage, we're acting from our hearts. And most of us have, our, if not every single one of us, have had severe injuries to our hearts because we've had adults around us when we were children and our hearts were open who were fearful and wounded. And I have discovered that one of the reasons why we hurt children so much, even people who want to be good parents, think they're good parents, actually do some pretty hurtful things to children, not because they want to or they're thinking I'm going to hurt them, but because the children remind them, oh my, okay, okay. Because the children remind them of themselves when they were children, and when they were children, how they were hurt was so unbearable and so buried and so now an automatic defense that they have automatic responses like the ones that were done to them. And so they harm their children too. And that's why looking at problems, getting new views, getting a new way to look at it, is the secret to processing old dysfunctional energy and turning it into healthy, powerful, radiant, healing, freeing, creative energy. This is what our job is now. This is what the evolutionary leap really is. We are in the midst of a huge global change that is going to affect all life on the planet because our species, and it is one species, is in the midst of evolving. There really are no races. There's just varieties of types. Some our superficial appearance type thing. Others are deeper styles of intelligence, styles of creativity. We are complex and wondrous. We have such simplistic, foolish categories of color as though that makes someone a particular race. One of the interesting things about DNA is that they did some research about gene pools, and they found that there are certain types of human, roughly, I don't know all the details, but roughly five types. But the interesting thing is, genetically speaking, these five types appear in all the races. So they don't divide up by race. It's such a superficial, shallow interpretation of who we are. And it's part of the unfolding of intelligence that we would make it a problem. It was almost unnecessary peace, just like all the wars that have ever existed. As horrible and futile and foolish and unnecessary as they were all necessary. Anything harmful that has ever happened had to be so someone would learn why it's not what we have to do. And that's why we have to keep trusting problems, because as the old saying goes, those who do not learn from history are condemned to repeat it. Well, we're condemned to repeat it because we haven't learned all the nuances and the details. So I think we're coming to the end here, and we have only about 3 or 4 minutes. So what I'd like you to know is that every week on Tuesday at noon, for some months to come at least, and hopefully much longer, I'll be here willing to work with you on any question. If you don't feel like you want to call on the phone, I understand. When I had my radio show before, I had just hundreds and hundreds of emails, and I appreciate it. Not fortunately all at the same time until I left, but but as things come up, as you listen to this, some thought will be triggered, maybe some question, some place, some old wound, and you don't have to tell me a whole lot. I fortunately have talked to so many thousands of people. I've actually talked to 250,000 people around the world. And so I've had a lot of feedback on the processing of healing this next level of consciousness. That's what I do. That's my work. That's the thing that I'm built to do. So as I always say in my workshop, hopefully you will get new ideas. You will get some good thoughts, some great words, some things that will be helpful. But I promise you, it is more than the words. It is the energetic reality. It is the truthfulness. It's the earnestness. It's the link that is created. And the depth of the link is directly related to the authenticity of our hearts and our minds and the openness of our being. So this is what makes it click. So even if you write it down, I'll tune into you. I will feel it. And I will give you a response, I believe, that will be deeper and more helpful than where you are. And that's our objective. And the other wonderful thing, and why I'm so glad to be back on the radio, is that this is an internet radio show. So people in Dubai can listen. People in Belgium can listen. People in London can listen. People in Australia can listen. And that is what we had with the other show, and I love it because no matter where you are, there's a way to listen. If you can't catch it live, to call in live, just listen to the podcast. Go to Contact Talk Radio and get it, or go to my website and get the podcast and listen again and reflect. So if you want to give me your email address, I'd be very grateful, because it lets me keep in touch with people and let them know. And the way you do that is just go to patriciasun.com. And there, you just send me an email, and I'll put you on the email list. Well, we're coming to an end. I hope with all our crackles, I didn't have the music, didn't have so many things, but we had each other. We had the earnestness. We had the realness. And in all situations, that's what really counts. So until the next time we get to talk, I want you to realize that trusting problems is a unique way to look at it. Every time you get stuck, from now to whenever, stop for a moment and say, going to the source of this. What's something wonderful I can do? And if you think, what is something wonderful I can do, your intuitive mind will let something newly be created and pop into your head, and you will become homo creatus. You will then be a creator, and you will be creating at the level of goodness and aliveness that we want. So until then, this is Patricia Sun saying, trust the problem.
You've been listening to Trust the Problem with Patricia Sun. If you'd like to listen to this program again, check back to contacttalkradio.com. That's contacttalkradio.com on the Patricia Sun webpage to hear the show in its entirety.